Hello and welcome to the Campaign podcast. I am Lucy Shelley, the new tech editor at Campaign. And yesterday we hosted the Gaming Summit 2024. And please excuse my hoarse voice because we also had the Agency of the Year Awards last night. So I think you can hear it was a bit of a late one for me. But in case you missed yesterday's event, today's episode is bringing you a short roundup of the best bits from the event, as well as the entire session from a panel discussion with Charlotte Tilbury, the British Heart Foundation, and the ex-gaming director at Formula E. This was a really lively discussion on how brands can build gaming communities for optimum engagement through co-creation. And you can hear the full conversation in about 5 minutes at the end of this recap. We heard from some brilliant brands and case studies on how to get into gaming, but it was surprising to see that there's actually still a knowledge gap in gaming, if you'll call it that, through assumptions and how you define it. But also people aren't considering themselves gamers when in fact there are. You don't need to have a headset and a console to be a gamer. If you're playing Wordle every day, then you are a pretty active gamer. But it's encouraging to see that these brands are realizing it's much easier to get into gaming and access this highly engaged community. And the audience is absolutely massive. Last year, the Game Awards got 118 million streams, which was more than the Super Bowl in 2023. And this hugely eclipses the Oscars last weekend, which got less than 20 million. Our opening keynote from Yuki's Pavina Bacada summed this up pretty well in a stat saying that more people are playing video games now than the entire population of the world when the first video game was released, which just shows you how huge this community really is. But I'd like to quickly talk about the final session of the day, which was a brilliant presentation from the team at PepsiCo and their work on Doritos. Their research had shown that gamers love Doritos, but the challenge that they had to overcome was the loud crunch that you get when you eat them, which is integral to the crisp experience, but was interrupting gameplay through the microphones and the headsets that they were using whilst they played. But to solve this issue for its consumers, they launched a campaign for Doritos Silent at the end of last year. And this campaign created a huge discussion on social media. People were asking what the hell they were doing and is anything left to invent? Which I think they were pretty pleased with the reaction that they got from their consumers. But this was all a build up to launching their AI software, which was trained on the exact Doritos crunch to eliminate it when microphones were picking it up without interfering with voice. The app itself got 20,000 downloads, but the reach that they gained from social media and the discussion around it was absolutely massive. And this was a brilliant example of how to interact and connect with the gaming community as a brand by solving an issue and creating a huge amount of earned media from it. So that was a quick snapshot and some highlights from me, but you'll now hear my conversation with Sam Wahab, Global Head of Gaming and XR at Charlotte Tilbury, Kieran Holmes-Darby, ex-gaming director at Formula E, and Leah Mates, Director of Marketing, Fundraising and Engagement at the British Heart Foundation. Take a listen.
Thanks for joining us today at this event. I thought we could start by just going through, introducing yourselves, what you do, who you are, and your interaction with gaming and in your jobs.
Hi, so I'm Leah Mates, Director of Marketing, Fundraising and Engagement at the British Heart Foundation, which is the lead-in UK funder of heart and circulatory research. And my role is essentially responsible for teams across the entire end-to-end customer journey. So that's everything from sort of customer data and insight, brand consideration, right through to acquisition of new customers, and then retention of them. And I'm really pleased to be on the panel today because I'm here as someone who isn't a gamer, and I think that actually that might help bring a bit of a diverse perspective to the panel discussion in terms of how brands and organisations can operate in that space authentically and with purpose.
It's an interesting point. We'll get your introductions in a bit. When we first spoke on Friday, as a group to kind of think about what we're going to talk about today, we introduced ourselves, as we just did, and spoke about if we game. And I thought it'd be interesting to understand from the audience who, you know, raise your hand if you are a gamer yourself. I guess that's almost the whole room, but not quite. So I think there is a proportion of us that either aren't gamers or don't consider ourselves gamers. I'm a mobile gamer, I'd say, but as I was speaking to Bastian, I think it was earlier, if you're a mobile game, you don't always consider yourself a gamer, so there's that kind of gap away. But Sam, would you like to introduce yourself, what you do, and your gaming history?
Yeah. Hey, everyone. I'm Sam. I'm the head of gaming at Charlotte Tilbury. And I look over our Magic Beauty Stars affiliates program, which is our brand ambassadorship program, and our Twitch channel that we've got. For most of you, I'm not sure if you're aware, we have a Twitch channel. We celebrated our one-year anniversary in February. Check it out. Talk more on that later, maybe, if I can plug it. And yeah, really happy to be here to share some insights.
Yeah, hi everyone. Pleasure to be here. My name's Kieran. I've been in the gaming and esports space for 10 years now. Spent the majority of that on an entrepreneurial journey, founding one of the UK's first professional esports teams. I then spent a little bit of time sports rights holder side, hence it says ex-gaming director at Formula E, heading up what they were doing in the digital marketing space, which largely focused on their kind of gaming strategy and helping them build that. And very recently joined Ear to the Ground, one of the event partners, creative marketing agency specializing in gaming. And I'm there to basically build out what they're doing in the space and level it up, which is that term that everyone keeps using today.
I know, I feel very embarrassed that we mentioned that so many times in our intro. Everyone's probably heard it a million times. But going back to the point that you kind of raised at the beginning about whether you game or not, whilst working in this space, let's hear from you guys about how important you think it is that you are a gamer or not, and how important do you think this is to understanding your audience? Kieran, should we start with you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's super interesting having differing perspectives on the panel, but I'm a big believer in you've got to be about what you talk about. I talk a lot about gaming, and I think it'd be pretty hypocritical if I wasn't a gamer. I think what's great, if I can just kind of draw on very recent experience of agency side in some like creative sessions that we've had, it's really nice to have a differing level of affiliation with gaming in a creative session, because, you know, I'm coming from a very endemic, you know, very in the know perspective, which is super helpful because you want to be up to date on the latest trends and, you know, what's going on in the space. But it's also useful having that, you know, different affiliations with gaming. If you're a mobile gamer, you don't consider yourself a gamer. I'm quite happy to label myself a gamer, but maybe, you know, you're not. You still, I think it's very hard to find someone who has had zero interaction with video games today. I mean, it's a very small percentage of the population. So it's nice having that those different views. But I do think it is important if you're going into this space that you want someone in that team that you're, you know, using to help you enter, that has some real endemic knowledge and can speak the lingo and, you know, really understands the space, yeah.
So we have Charlotte Tilbury and British Heart Foundation, which are slightly newer brands into the gaming space. Sam, how important do you think it is that understanding your audience of gaming itself?
Well, I think it's important. I mean, there's two ways. You can be a gamer and know a lot about gaming because you are your audience. I think there's also that element of, if you're not a gamer, you can bring some insights from a non-gaming background to gaming, which I think is also very valuable depending on the departments you're working with. For example, I work at Charlotte Tilbury. When I tell people that's not the first thing they think, which is understandable. But I walk into some of these meetings that maybe aren't focused on gaming, and I bring in some just, you know, out-of-the-box questions that... I myself, when I'm in a meeting about gaming, someone who doesn't know about gaming might ask a question and I say, I never thought of that because I'm just so immersed in it. So I think there are ways that you can know about your audience without having to be a part of it, as long as you just put in the effort to go in there and want to be credible and authentic, because the information is there. You just need to do your research. I think it's a plus, because when you're talking to a streamer and, you know, you're talking about what kind of games they play, but it's not always like a gamer. You can be a mobile gamer. You can be, you know, like RPGs, FPSs. Are you a PC gamer? It's just such a wide thing. I have nothing in common with a League of Legends gamer at all. It's not my style of game, but I will
get on quite well.
But. Yeah, sorry. It's just like, if you ever do Fortnite, hit me up. Seeing an interaction like that, it's something that you can do, but it doesn't mean that we wouldn't be able to have a cool conversation about gaming because you would bring something to the conversation that I wouldn't think about. So, you know, I think it's important. I don't think it's a must, depending on what you're doing. And plus, you can work in gaming without working directly with gaming influencers. There's the legal departments, there's the marketing, the advertising, it's a whole industry. So there are a lot of people who come up with ideas for games who maybe have never played a game. So I think it's just the more of us, the better.
Personally. And it speaks to the point that was made earlier about liking music. You know, how much does that really connect everyone that likes music? And there's so many different communities within that. But Leah, to finally answer the question, how does that change your team perhaps?
Yeah, so I mean, I don't disagree with either. I think that you absolutely have to understand your audience. So it's not that me not being, personally not being a gamer doesn't mean that I don't think it's critical and fundamental. We need to understand like interests and motivations and their purpose. And either that's through yourself or, as you've said, Sam, leveraging the expertise from elsewhere. So British Chat Foundation delving into online gaming for the first time in terms of a Twitch campaign we did recently. It was around a sort of life-saving CPR tool that we were using to reach. We wanted to connect with Gen Z audiences, and we know that they operate, largely speaking, online. So we have a real purpose and need in that space. Whilst I'm not necessarily operating within that space, actually we worked with GameSquare and Ventura, gaming specialists and mobile gaming specialists, to help us create that sort of content and the expertise and understanding. And members of my team had that skill set too. But also, I think if anyone here is working in organisations or brands or marketing, you're not necessarily always the target audience, right? But you will have tools and techniques in which to gain that deep understanding, be it quality insight or quant research, or just actually speaking to those audiences and getting connected into that world. So I don't think it should put you off, but you absolutely have to your point, understand the audience, whether it's you directly or not.
I guess, does it maybe then, if you're coming from with a fresher set of eyes, it kind of get rid of any assumptions that could be made about an audience perhaps?
Oh yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think that brand assumptions versus the realities of the gaming space is definitely something to explore. We actually do. You mentioned quant and qual analysis, and I think that's super interesting because I think there's a load of quant analysis out there on gaming already, where I think it's quite easy to look at that and sort of dissect the space and understand different areas you could potentially play in. Like it's very easy to understand that the gender balance on Candy Crush is very different to the gender balance on Call of Duty, right? Like there's a lot of quant analysis out there to understand that. But I think what we do a lot at our agency is actually qual analysis. We have something called fan intelligence, where we engage with fans directly to co-create campaigns and activations. And I just think it's kind of a no-brainer, because I don't think gaming is a space where build it and they will come. I think it's very much ask them what they want and build it. And they will tell you, like, they're a pretty engaged audience. Spoke about them being like really leaned in. They're already engaged. That playing is kind of part of the whole industry. So I don't think it's difficult to get them to engage with a campaign, or really, and they will tell you what they think, which is great. It's amazing if you engage them at an early enough stage when you're creating these campaigns.
Well, yeah. So co-creation, that's something that we're here to talk about, and also building community. So let's jump to the next question and talk about the difference between audience and community. Because I think in gaming, it's slightly different to the definitions that you might find on social media, for example. And also, how would a brand make this jump, this elevation from an audience to a community? Sam, would you like to start us off?
Yeah, sure. I think the difference between audience and community is, for example, at Charlotte Tilbury, we have a big audience, right? But we have different communities depending on which social platform you're on. So Instagram would be more to the beauty side, Twitch would be more towards the gaming side. So I think the difference, for me at least, is the audience, you'll have the general demographics, but when it comes to community and engagement, particularly in gaming, because of the nature of Twitch and the interactivity, you tend to know who some of these usernames are, and you build that sort of back and forth. And especially if you're starting off as a micro streamer and building, you have some of your day ones there. So I think, for me, the difference is audience, great. Then you have different communities within that audience and see how you can tailor make the experience on the medium that they're in that speaks to them.
And at the British Heart Foundation, have you found connecting with your community
So obviously, like, audience is very much more kind of one to many, and you're in some respects sort of pushing your content onto the consumer and hoping that because they have a motivation or interest in it that they'll consume it, whereas community is much more that many to many, and that feels much more active, and like participation is really key, be it around discussion or shared learnings. So in the British Heart Foundation, we've, you know, I've said we're relatively new to sort of the online gaming space and in those communities, but actually we've operated in terms of online communities, be it more kind of forum based, for many years. And we actually have sort of Health Unlocked forums, which have sort of 50,000 members, and they are peer support networks. And that is much more a forum where it's sort of co-creation, and we take a much more sort of passive role in that, in terms of stepping back. And then, as you've said, it's around actually hearing what they need and then creating that content, so pulling it in. And then sort of that jump that we made recently into the sort of online community space, again, that was taking learnings from the sort of online forums and then making sure that actually we didn't just jump in and make those assumptions, but we actually, you know, from a community perspective, looked at ways to actually co-create that content, working with either specialists or actually going direct to the streamers themselves. So I think it's fundamentally a change of mindset and of execution. So stop acting as the sort of lead brand who's then trying to position yourself as that essential purchase or why you need me, and actually it's, you know, looking at what the value you can give to that community. So change your mindset from the get-go and then create the content with that mindset in mind as well. So that content has to be much more with you as a passive contributor. So that's the sort of difference I've found recently.
Yeah, I think to build upon that, I mean, at a high level, your audience watches your content, your community engages with it. Yeah. And I think for brands to take that leap from kind of watch to engage, or from audience to community, I think have fun with it. Like, the gaming industry is kind of built on people having fun and people playing. And, you know, the meme culture is huge in gaming. Like, I think if you take the attitude of have fun with it, you will get the engagement. And then once you've got the engagement, if you've positioned your brand in the right way, once you've got that two-way conversation, you can actually start to learn. And I don't think that brands have to nail it straight off the bat first time in this space. Like, you do have time to learn. As long as you position your brand in the right way, you start that two-way conversation, you can dip your toe in a bit, learn something, and then come back with something better. I think that's how I advise all brands to kind of approach this space. And yeah, it allows you to test and learn, but whilst having a genuine engagement with that fan base.
Can I just build on that? We've definitely tested and learned, and I think that the content that we created, which was still felt a bit more brand-led, where we basically, the streamers essentially flatlined their live streams at like 5 o'clock to mimic a cardiac arrest, to then create that sort of conversation around CPR and having that life-saving tool. That still had an advert that then basically showed. I would say the what we found was then the content that we created, which was much more around like the fun element, the sort of stuff that should sit in that environment. So we had a CPR related quiz, which was really highly interactive. It was gamification. It felt like it should sit in that environment. And that was the one that actually has created the most click-throughs, impressions, and resulted in the most number of people who went on to learn CPR and actually take that tool away. The other content, loads of, you know, vanity sort of, and get, you know, KPIs to some extent, click-throughs, impressions, sort of 5 million impressions, 3,000 people clicked through and started to learn. But actually it was the quiz and that interactive content that was sort of the more fun, more like it should be native to the environment, that actually took people through to becoming lifesavers essentially. So we've learned and tested, and we'll take that through into sort of next the next routes that we do.
It's a really cool activation.
Read a home campaign, you
think? Yeah, nice. Good plug.
Sticking to this kind of test and learn, failure and experimentation kind of piece, do you think it really lends itself into gaming because of the nature of gaming and the fun and the play? Do you think it's a good place for brands to play and experiment?
Yeah, very much. I mean, just what I was saying there, I think that the audience is kind of already leaned into that idea of playfulness and play. So I think, as long as you can create something and a space where they feel they can do that and they can engage you, they will. Like, they 100% will. And I don't think, I think some of the panels today have spoken about longevity. I think that's really good, because I think this space is kind of built for that. And I think if you there's quite a bit of work to do up front. That's what I'd say. Like you can't, but you need to know the space you're operating in, the ecosystem, and you know the people you're trying to engage with. Like there's quite a bit of work to do up front. But if you do that work and you position your brand in the correct way, then when it comes to campaigns and different activations you want to run, that's where you can really test and learn, and you can dip your toe in. And yeah, as long as you know you've done the upfront work and you're confident in how you're positioning your brand, yeah, have some fun with it, test and learn, see the sort of feedback you get from the audience, and see what works and what doesn't. That's where the kind of the longevity piece comes in.
I mean, Sam, I don't know, Charlotte Tilbury, you know, such a big brand like that, is it an easy place to test and learn, play and experiment?
Well, yes, because the cool thing about Charlotte Tilbury is we always link it back to the purpose, right? So the purpose for us is to highlight, champion, and empower people to feel and look their best, and particularly with a focus on female gamers, right? And as a brand that had a female founder, who's a creative individual who is entrepreneurial and who has a philanthropy side, it was kind of, it was an easy way to just have a, you know, take that purpose and take it into gaming. And building off of what you just said about, you know, knowing your space and having fun with it. So, you know, it's not as easy as, oh, just have a Twitch channel, for example, and see where it goes. But if you work with the right partners, you know, we've got like Attention Seekers over here who are friends of ours, award-winning production agency. So we tied up with them. And it's just one of those things where you have an idea, you know how Twitch works. You want to just make sure you adapt to that medium and make it fun. And would anyone watch it? So it's a difference between taking a marketing executive and putting them on a live stream. Like, where's the fun in that? I always think, you know, being a gamer myself, what would I want to watch? So if you see that there is a need where you can give back to, because it's the gaming audience or the gaming community wants a brand that will give, not just a brand that'll take. So when you have a brand like ours that has artistry involved, you take that education, you take the entertainment, you have the formats that we've got, which is a Get Ready With Me in Game, a podcast format, and a pro makeup artist format. So those are 5 days, 2 to 3 hours every day, just treating a creator platform as a brand, just going in as a creator. So yeah, it's not everything is going to go 100% because it's Twitch, it's live streaming. So if there are, you know, any issues on stream with our four, you know, streamer native hosts, right? The medium knows that, okay, you'll have an issue with the mic, or, you know, there'll be a mess up in a game, but that's the fun of it. So you know that you can just enjoy that experience, and it's a test and learn. And plus your community on Twitch will tell you, oh, that was cool. And they could sometimes suggest games. They could sometimes say what they like and what they didn't like. It's just that interactivity and that live element of that conversation happening in real time is exciting. So if you're having fun with it, they'll know, they'll enjoy it, and you're doing something that's kind of fun and unique.
I also think that it's it gives you the opportunity as a brand, if you're not necessarily a traditionally playful or humorous in that space, to actually start to operate in that way, but it releases the pressure a bit because you're not the one positioning yourself as that. So just thinking to some of the live streamers that actually took part in the Twitch takeover, some of them just treated it quite seriously as it was, and you could see then in the content and the comments that people were making that it was taken so. And then others, there was one who actually felt quite connected to it because they'd lost their father from a heart condition. They actually took out a stuffed sheep because basically the tool was to learn CPR using your mobile and a cushion in just 15 minutes. And they then did it live with a stuffed sheep to Staying Alive music. So there was a real humorous element there, which really engaged their audience. And you could see that through the responses and the activity. It's not something that we as the British Heart Foundation could do ourselves. Like, we couldn't operate necessarily in that humorous, playful space in that way. So I think it gives you the opportunity, without having sub-brands as well, to be a slightly different sort of have a slightly different tone of voice. Yeah,
I think what Sam was saying about give and take, I think the biggest thing that brands can take away is, like, find where your value add is to this audience. Like, find where you're going to add value, and which piece of emotional insight that you've gained from that audience can you tap into and genuinely go and add value. If you nail that, then it doesn't really matter what you do around that, you'll be fine.
And now a quick word from one of our sister titles.
Want to know what makes the biggest brands in the world tick?
check out Performance Marketing Unlocked. It's the podcast from PMW, sister title to Campaign Magazine, and it delves deeper into the performance side of marketing and finds out what really drives the leads, clicks, and sales behind some of the biggest brands in the world. From social media and AI to CTV and the Super Bowl, we catch up with the biggest news of the week and speak to guests from the top of the industry and at the heart of its biggest issues. Make sure to check us out at performancemarketingworld.com and follow to keep up to date with the latest Performance Marketing Unlocked episodes.
Thanks for all that. I think this is all based upon really knowing and understanding your audience, which we have just spoken about. But do you have any methods that you would recommend people that are just about to get started in this environment, you know, brands and advertisers, that is, to help understand their audiences better?
Just speak to people in the space. Like, people of you in the room are already doing the right thing by being here and trying to understand what the space is doing and what looks good, what doesn't look good in the space. Obviously, speak to experts if you don't have them internally. Like, talk to the people that are working in the industry and doing what you think is good work. That's kind of the main thing, I think, to be honest.
Definitely do that. Also, if you want something super immediate, just, you know, follow IGN, get on Reddit, Google some gaming publications, and just immerse yourself in that. I mean, download Discord, download Twitch, and just get on those platforms, because that's where the community is talking. So, and that's where, you know, anything that's happening, that's cool, is happening on those platforms. So go to the platform so you can get the information right there. Then next thing you know, your Instagram, your LinkedIn, all the algorithms will just start spewing out gaming stuff for you. And then you're just up to date, because it's not so much survival of the fittest, it's survival of the fastest. So it's just know about it and just dive into it. It's easy to get overwhelmed by it because there's so much going on in every single type of genre of game, especially now that gaming is crossing over into film and music. Just download those apps, follow a few publications. I mean, that's the easiest way to get into it. And then, you know, download some free games. There's a lot of cool free-to-play games out there.
It definitely can appear quite overwhelming, I think, especially when we look at gaming and take it as a whole industry and don't really kind of, you know, take the nuances of the different communities that we're talking about and the different ways a brand can get involved in gaming, I think. But we mentioned it earlier, but I think let's talk about longer campaigns and how co-creation and kind of using these native environments can really encourage longevity. How does this help build authentic relationships? Should we start with you, Leah?
Sure. I guess with it, because co-creation or existing in those communities, if somebody feels, whether it's online gaming or in your work environment, I'm sure you've been in situations where if you try and sell an idea to someone that you've just come up with, there's either it's harder work, it's met with resistance, you're on a longer journey of trying to convince them that this is the right route to go. Whereas if you co-create, there's a sense of accountability and ownership and shared investment in it. So it really feels like that can help create longevity in terms of, you know, it's not just a short-term tactical campaign necessarily, you can actually help start to create advocates or brand loyalty and then improve lifetime value over time. And I think, like, it's for us, we have obviously just dipped our toes in the waters at the British Heart Foundation, but what it's helped to highlight, I suppose, is that this is a really cost effective and very quick way in some respects of engaging with an audience, and an audience that we know traditionally, so two-thirds of 16 to 26-year-olds who are most likely to engage with CPR, you know, 67% of them are most likely to learn it, they traditionally use ad blockers, so two-thirds of them. So it's really hard to reach an audience that we know would be very engaged with the content, but actually through traditional advertising you can't do. If you approach it in this way of entering into a community, you can both reach an audience that potentially you weren't able to before with a real purpose, co-create, and then off the back of that, help create the learnings. So that test and learn piece, I think, is really important. We've learned actually it has worked. It's both generated really immediate response and learners, but also we have a long-term mission target around this. It's not just a, you know, one-off week-long campaign. We're trying to get the entire UK nation to learn CPR as a life-saving tool. So actually, this is an opportunity to engage with an audience over a long term. And I think the learnings there is not just to do what we did, but actually how we take the content and start to genuinely build it with that community rather than the sort of half and half we've done initially. So I think it can play a much bigger role in terms of longevity, sustainability, and also just give you real behavioural data, which you just don't really get these days. You get sort of claimed or stated as opposed to actually seeing people in action.
It seems like a real partnership with your audience in the way of
Yeah, exactly.
What about Sam? How do native environments and co-creation help longer campaigns at Charlton?
Well, I mean, I can give our Twitch channel as an example. I mean, we have our four hosts who are Twitch native streamers, and, you know, sure, we have three different formats, but everything that we just sort of like give headlines, you know, of what we'd like to talk about, but whether it's the games or whether it's how that content goes out, it's basically up to them because we trust their personalities. They're also creators. And when you're dealing with creative individuals, just let them be creative, you know, share in that, and they'll come up with some of the best ideas. And this is just in general, not just for gaming. I've previously worked at Red Bull for 7 years working with, you know, musicians, artists, and DJs, music, and then moving into gaming. It's the same thing. If you're working with creative individuals, share an idea, because some of the best ones will be, it always starts with, you know what would be cool? And then they would take that and run with it. So if you're working with streamers, they have a community that love them for the way they do things. So go up to them, give them a brief, and just give them creative freedom, within guidelines, of course, and then just let them come up with stuff, and they'll surprise you. So we do that 5 days a week on our Twitch channel. I know I keep plugging it, so I'm hoping we get some follow after this. Charlotte Tilbury on Twitch, check it out. And you know, it's just every day. I don't even know what the stream is going to be like because it's improvisational. It's like, you know, mentioned earlier, it's like a jazzy approach to it. You know where you want to go. You don't know exactly where it's going to be, but that's what adds to the fun live element of it. It's like when you go to a concert and the drummer messes up. It's fun. It makes it real. Otherwise, you're just watching playback.
I was going to make a tangential point to co-creation and take a slight pop at the metaverse, the bloody metaverse, because I think that, you know, I've been banging on about for years this idea of like digital activations, the idea of having something physical and something digital. That makes a load of sense. Gaming's been doing that for a long time. And I think that the PR that came out, the PR buzz around the metaverse kind of has led brands to thinking, right, we've got to do something in Roblox or Fortnite because that's where, you know, these sandbox games, that's where we've got to be. I'm not saying that there's no value in those games because there definitely is. We've seen some awesome examples today of some really cool activations in those spaces. It definitely works for some brands, but it's not a one-size-fits-all. It doesn't work for everyone. And I think that is one asset of a variety of assets that you could either create or partner with to do a campaign that has longevity, that, you know, has some real authenticity and actually is going to get some cut through as opposed to getting lost in these, you know, very large worlds that are pretty oversaturated today. So that was my just one point of contribution.
Thank you. We are going to go to questions, so please start thinking about some. But before we do, I'm going to put you guys slightly on the spot here. But you can't answer your own brand in this question, but are there any other brands out there that you think they are really nailing it and are kind of providing me with some inspiration about engaging with community through gaming?
I mean, the easiest thing is, because I used to work there, Red Bull, when it comes to the approach of creating content. I think, you know, back then it was just about, there was already a brand, but then you had other brands like Adidas or GoPro coming to Red Bull and saying, we'd like to be involved in your content, because the approach there was entertain and then the product is secondary. So to me, I've always, while working there, it was just a great opportunity to see how you can, you know, take inspiration from doing cool stuff with cool people. And that's something that also resonated with me in my current role, but I can't say that one either. So.
No, you can't. Leah, what about you? Do you have...
Well, I mean, obviously Charlotte Tilbury. I think, I mean, obviously we've taken huge inspiration, and so have I, before kind of operating into the space. But I do keep a keen eye on what other charities are doing, just because I do think, as was said in the second to last conversation that happened here, the keynote, where we're not very progressive necessarily sometimes in the sector, and actually seeing what other organisations are doing. So NSPCC has actually been operating that space for a while and been sort of interested to see what they do.
Yeah, I'll give shout out to our friends at Unilever. We weren't involved in this campaign, so I'm not plugging our work, to be clear. But they literally announced yesterday a really cool campaign. I think it was mentioned in the first panel around Knorr, where they found a really cool bit of insight, which, you know, resonates with me as a gamer, that, you know, when you're playing games, if you have vegetarian food, it doesn't give you as much HP as meat or fish, which, you know, is the case in World of Warcraft, RuneScape, all of those games, and never really clicked with me. But that's a quite a cool insight to play on. And obviously there's a huge demographic of gamers who are veggie or vegan that they can engage with, and they've developed like mods for different games where veggie food actually then becomes the most powerful food in the game if you input this mod. That's cool. That's a great bit of insight. That's going to land really well.
Is it more expensive?
I don't know. But yeah, I think that's just like the classic. If you do, when I go back to analysis, if you do qual analysis and you actually engage with the audience and you just find that little nugget of insight that I don't feel very represented as a veggie in gaming, like the veggie food's crap, like that's really cool to then go and build a campaign on that. So yeah, well done to them.
No, I think that's a good example. I reported on that yesterday, and I thought it was interesting, not only just because of what it actually does in terms of games, but in terms of telling people in real life that veggies aren't, you know, they need to be rated more highly in the same kind of way. So it's encouraging, you know, real life sales, bridging that digital gap, as you said. Questions. So I hope I support some. Does anyone have a question? We have a couple going around. I'm not sure who's got the mic, but we have one at the front here and one at the back by the wall. Elena, have you got the mic? We've got one right at the back by the wall there, gentlemen. Thank you. Probably need to share it close together.
There's a race happening there. Hi, Richard from Ear to the Ground. I'm going to plug your Twitch channel again. Sorry, Sam. Well, not apologies to you, apologies to everyone else. But one of the questions that we often get asked by non-endemic brands in particular, like they're often, the recommendation is often not to build their own Twitch channel because of the upkeep, the challenges that you have in engaging an audience on a consistent level. So I wanted to get a bit more insight from yourself as to why you chose to do that and how it's performing.
Well, if we want to be credible and authentic in the gaming industry, it's about, you know, what's in the Venn diagram of gamers and beauty and cosmetics, right? So gaming could be a solo experience, could be a co-op experience, it could be just me time, or a social experience. Same thing with skincare and cosmetics. As I dived into it and just educated myself on it, it can also be a solo experience or, you know, a social experience. And it's also, there's some threads there, which is, as a gamer, you go online, you check out tutorials, tips and tricks, and you build that community. Same thing with skincare and cosmetics, because there's the artistry of it. It wasn't until I got to this job where I realized the value of the word artist and makeup artist. And I didn't know just how much creativity goes into that. So I was like, all right, so there is that little Venn diagram where they both intersect, which is the training, the artistry, the tutorials. So I thought, we are a brand that just has so much content and so many master classes, and our pro makeup artists have, you know, virtual sessions. So if we want to do something, then why not just have an always on approach? Just like if we were, you know, a streamer, right? If you want to build consistency, build that audience, just show up every day, be community first, audience second, earn that credibility. That's why when we launched it, we didn't launch it with all the bells and whistles and go straight to the biggest names, because then it would just be the easy way out. It's start with the community. If you want to highlight, champion, and empower people, you don't go to the biggest names that are already, you know, in the spotlight. Start off with people who need it, and not just as a stepping stone. Always engage when you make your way all the way to a point where you feel comfortable reaching those streamers. But also, because there was that alignment internally, it was just a strategy that everyone committed to and thought was the right approach, which I'm happy about. And here we are a year later, and we've got healthy numbers, and people seem to be acting, responding positively to how we're acting in the space. I hope that answers it.
Yeah, nice, thanks.
I think we had a question at the front here, but it's dotted around. We'll go you there just in the other place. Obstacle course to go there.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Katia. So I just wanted to, Twitch is being mentioned a lot, but I think Kieran, you mentioned other channels as well, right? And mobile gaming has come up. I am from Unity, which is a mobile gaming engine. We also have an ad network. So for me, the question is probably more towards the barriers to entry, somewhere like mobile gaming. The assets are all there, the creatives are all there, you know, the barriers to entry, some that space are quite low. So what are your strategies? Again, also building on the presentation earlier from Activision on, you know, the moms in the industry, etc. So what's your view on the mobile gaming space?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there are barriers to entry, to be honest, in the mobile gaming space. Maybe people aren't paying enough attention to it, but I don't think there are barriers at all. I think, to be honest, it's a case of, and I do feel like we've been saying this for a few years, so maybe some, like myself included, people in the room, we need to do a better job of this, but like I do think there is a lack of education amongst brands of just the ecosystem. Like when people think of gaming, they don't really understand like the difference with, you know, where game publishers make games, and then there's, you know, esports over here with the organizers and the teams, and influence over here and conventions over here. You know, there's this whole ecosystem of potential assets that you could get involved with. And there's definitely not a one size fits all. But yeah, I don't think there are barriers to entry for mobile gaming. I think it's ripe and ready to do some really cool activations with. It's got content creators, it's got the publishers who are, you know, and the game engines who are keen to do partnerships with brands. I suppose it's just about navigating that space and finding the assets that actually make sense for your brand.
We've got one final question at the front.
Hey, thanks. I was just going to ask, this is probably more a question for Sam and Leah because you come from the brand side of things, but what advice do you have to give clients basically saying that you're going to have to give away a little bit of control when you work with streamers and sort of pass power over to your communities? Because my experience is I found a lot of clients are very nervous about going, what if they say something we don't want? Or what if they do that in a way that we can't control? Like, what advice do you have for people who are trying to convince their clients to do that sort of thing?
So, I mean, it's not a question of convincing. I think you have to. Otherwise, there's going to be a risk of being left behind. You know, don't know, wants to be the Kodak of the world. So I think some of it is around managing the expectations through just showing what other organisations are doing, and the data behind it, and the both the good and the bad, and actually then look at the risk appetite of the organisation and you know, what's the worst that can happen to some extent. I think, like, specifically, the talking back to the campaign we've just done, obviously there's a huge number of potential things that could go wrong with having live streamers talk about essentially medical research and scientific pieces of work, but you have to let that go to some extent. And so you provide them with FAQs, briefing, in the same way that you do with, I suppose, more obvious things as a brand, like PR, when you're briefing journalists or media, you know, media content, you provide them with the brief, you provide them with the assets and the FAQs. If they go off brief, it's a risk that the brand, that brands are already managing. So you kind of got to show the examples that are quite similar to it. And it's essentially that, like, people, it's about risk appetite for the organization. And I suppose just again, yeah, showing those examples of where other organizations like you are doing this and where you could potentially be sort of left behind. But I do think a really key point as well is the purpose one that's been brought up a lot. Like, it's not just getting into it for the sake of it, it's having a real purpose. And that's essentially what we've sort of been waiting for, is why? Why are we going into that space? You know, why can't we just keep doing what we've been doing? And ours was essentially around that purpose of, we know it's an audience that are fundamentally the sort of audience that are going to engage with learning that life-saving skill. And there was a real mission drive to it. So it was more a case of, well, if you don't do that, you're not fulfilling your mission, your purpose as a brand. So it made it a lot easier as well to convince. So I think it's around why as well, like why, and making that really clear.
Yeah, so just building off of that, absolutely. It's just, first of all, do your homework about who you're working with. You know, it's always good to vet them and talk to your other teams as well, you know, when it comes to policies of what you can and can't do. So you go in, you find out who you're working with, you do your homework on their background just to make sure they're a fit brand-wise. Then you brief them, right? You sit down, you have a conversation, you gauge their interest and excitement, And then once you do that, you also bring in other team members who might be there for the briefing process, just to make sure everything is set. And look, there's always going to be a risk, especially if you're working in a live environment, but you do your best to mitigate the risks, right? Especially when you're doing, when you're working with live platforms like Twitch, right? You can have the community just take a conversation somewhere. So if you know who you're working with, you check their background, they're cool, you give them a proper briefing, then yeah, it is inevitable. You're going to have to work on co-creation, because otherwise, yeah, you're left behind. And you miss out on some really cool ideas that can come from them. So just mitigate the risk. It'll never be 0%, but if you're not going to take any risks, then what's the point, right?
Awesome. Cheers. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for joining us.
If you'd like to learn more about what we discussed in this week's podcast, please visit campaignlive.co.uk. Details of our subscriptions are available at campaignlive.co.uk/membership. And if you enjoyed this episode, please follow us, like us, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. A huge thank you, as always, to Haymarket studio manager Nav Pal and producer Till Owen. But also, thank you too for listening, and we hope you will join us next time. So on behalf of the campaign team, goodbye.